Accessing library computer data.
And to make sure history never forgets the name Enterprise.
Hey, everybody, welcome to the Penske Podcast. This is a part of the Penske File. What we're doing, this is a podcast where we are running through all 178 episodes of Star Trek The Next Generation, giving our thoughts and feelings about each and every one of them. Right now, we're up to episode 8 of season 2. It's called A Matter of Honor. It was directed by Rob Bowman. The teleplay credit goes to Burton Armus. The story credit goes to Wanda Haight, Gregory Amos, and Burton Armus. It aired way back on February 6, 1989. This is the episode where Commander Riker is assigned to be the temporary first officer of a Klingon vessel as part of an officer exchange program. This one is, it's good. You know, things are changing. You can feel it in the air. It's like spring. You know, winter turns to spring. And that's how we sort of feel now with the Matter of Honor episode that we're just about to talk about. Clay is going to join me for this one. Clay's been here before. And we will get to this Klingon-heavy episode and a Riker-heavy episode right after this break.
Tell me of the surest method of attack against the Enterprise.
I won't.
You must. It is a matter of honor and loyalty to your oath.
I will not surrender the secrets of the Enterprise to you.
If your word is no good, then how can we ever trust Starfleet?
I will not break any vow that I have taken in the past. I have also taken an oath of loyalty to your ship. I will not break that.
They are in conflict!
No, sir, they are not! I will obey your orders. I will serve this ship as first officer. And in an attack against the Enterprise, I will die with this crew. But I will not break my oath of loyalty to Starfleet.
If you had told those secrets about the Enterprise, I would have labeled you a traitor and killed you where you stood. But instead, you will die with us. You will die like a Klingon.
Hey, everybody. Hope you enjoyed that little clip from A Matter of Honor. I'm here joined by Clay. Clay, how are you?
I'm good. I'm enjoying some gah.
This episode has a lot of Klingon pronunciation. Which it kind of makes me feel like French, where if you're saying something and you're not trying to pronounce it, you're being a dick, and if you're over pronouncing it, you sound like an asshole. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So there's the ship is called the Pa, and they eat gah.
Gah.
So that's pretty much the main thing here. But yeah, thank you for coming on board the show to talk about this one.
Oh, no problem. I enjoy all of these.
I'm just going to spill the beans right here. I think this is far and away the best episode of the show that's been done so far, on our little run through anyway.
And yeah. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
No, I just wanted to get your sort of general opinion before we get into it.
Yeah. I like this episode a lot. I think this episode is what the Neutral Zone episode, should have been.
Uh-huh.
In that, if you're going for a uniquely and fully Star Trek sort of concept, I think this one gets the most out of it because they get the most amount of tension out of a misunderstanding, a cultural misunderstanding.
Yes, that's true. I wasn't even thinking about that. I thought you were going to go with the, because it feels like a Next Generation version of Balance of Terror in some ways too.
Yeah. I can definitely see that. Balance of Terror obviously is much more, there is legit, let's just put it this way. As long as Riker is on a Klingon ship, no matter what he says to that captain, he is not going to blow up the Enterprise.
That's true.
You know?
I think that's why I kind of consider it a next gen, because where Balance of Terror is an original series that's purely plot mechanics,
yep.
This one focuses on how the characters would interact in that situation,
right?
Which is a much more next gen-y thing. Mm-hmm. But I really enjoy this one, and this I feel like this is the first episode where I can actually look back and be like, that was a great scene. You know, it's like I don't think this is a great episode in and of itself, but it's like it's the first one where I've sort of watched it and then thought about it, or even just remembered great scenes. Like I love the Riker kicking the shit out of the Klingon is like my favorite thing. And I think it's just...
The Klingon played by one of my favorite lower-level character actors, Brian Thompson.
Oh, really? What else has he done?
He was he had a few different roles on Buffy the Vampire Slayer. He's probably most well-known or, you know, generally known as the first guy that Arnold Schwarzenegger kills in The Terminator.
Oh, nice.
He's when Bill Paxton and the other punks are hanging out, he's the guy that goes, "Wash day, nothing clean, right?" And then he gets punched through the chest. He shows up in stuff all the time. I always liked. Oh, actually, no, I'm sorry. The thing he's most well known for is he's the alien bounty hunter on the X-Files.
Oh, okay. There you go. Yeah, that would. So he's certainly made his mark on the industry, huh? For these couple of decades.
Yeah, well, this episode was actually directed by another Rob Bowman joint, who yes. also was an X-Files guy.
Yeah, it looked like a Bowman thing. I think the most directorial sort of thing to take away from it is when the Benzite Mendon is typing into the computer.
Mm-hmm.
It's shot very cool, where it's sort of a close-up of his hand, and then it's like seeing the readout on the screen of inconclusive, whatever he's trying to scan.
Mm.
It felt very X-File-y to me, or sort of like modern television and how that was shot.
Yeah. I don't know if this is jumping too far too quickly, but from a directorial thing, the one thing I did notice about this episode is that the stuff on the Enterprise felt kind of flat to me.
Yeah, yep.
The stuff on the Klingon ship is great, but I don't know. There's just something about the staging and the delivery of all of the Enterprise stuff where it felt very dry and stilted.
It's funny you say that. I think it's almost intentional because it's like a I think it really highlights the difference between the two ships, because when the Klingon captain sort of decides that he's going to attack the Enterprise,
mm-hmm.
It sort of goes from like they're all yelling and it's hyper emotional and they're sort of like, "We will fire and destroy them," and then it cuts to Picard and Data just sitting on the bridge.
Yeah.
It's such a tonal shift of like the Enterprise is like just sort of all business, where the Klingon ship is really just hyper emotional.
That's true. Yeah.
And I thought it was just kind of a nice playoff of like, this is how the two cultures are different.
Mm.
Sorry, did you have something else you wanted to say?
I was just going to say it does accentuate the viewpoints where the Klingons are preparing for imminent death and the Enterprise is just trying to tell them that their taillight is out, basically.
Right, yeah, essentially. And it's – I just thought that this one – I thought the script here felt really mature.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the first – I have some minor quibbles with this show, but mm-hmm. my quibbles are sort of – the reason I think the episode is so good is that my enjoyment out of watching it ignores all the quibbles, and I don't care about them.
Right.
I think – you know, just to get them out of the way, my minor quibbles here would be I don't really understand what the Benzites' relationship to everything is.
Yeah. Because go ahead.
No, well, he's on this exchange program that Riker's mm-hmm. on, right?
Yep.
So Riker's going to a Klingon ship. It seems to me that the exchange program is between races that aren't in the Federation and the Federation.
Yeah, I thought...
But he's wearing a Starfleet uniform.
Right. I thought, I thought Wesley made some mention of... when he just proves himself to be completely racist and thinking that all Benzites look alike.
Mordok, what are you doing here? You couldn't have graduated the academy already.
I am not Mordok. I am Mendon. Ensign Mendon from the planet Benzar.
Sorry. Hey, it's a friend of mine. You look just like him.
We are from the same geostructure. Naturally, we look alike.
How do you tell each other apart?
We just do.
He makes some mention of the one that he knows rising through Starfleet.
From coming
quickly.
Of age. In the episode where he was tested, he met he met someone who is he met another Benzite who I can't remember his name, it was like Mordok or something.
Oh yeah, I guess the whole point is that it's not him and that it's some, because I was gonna say the thing with him that stood out to me was how Like, why would they, if this guy doesn't know the procedures, why would they let him into Starfleet to begin with? But
right, that's the whole conflict. So, I mean, I think you could, they sort of shot themselves in the foot by having to have this scene where Wesley confuses him for another guy, racistly.
Yeah. Mm.
Because if you had just made it another alien that we'd never seen before, you don't really lose anything. And I don't know why he's wearing a Starfleet uniform. He should be dressed in his uniform and serving on his ship, because if he's gone through the academy, why does he not know what Starfleet regulations are?
Exactly, right.
So it would make more sense if, because he says in the episode that he comes from a Benzite ship and they do things differently.
Mm-hmm.
And if he was a member of a non-Federation race that hadn't gone through Starfleet, it would be like, oh, well, you kind of fucked up, but it's understandable why you fucked up.
And also, why does he beam aboard with a bunch of other
Starfleet
ensigns or something?
Yep.
I mean, it seemed unnecessary, except to have that beat where Wesley confuses him with his friend.
How do you tell each other apart? We just do. Although it was a nice way to dodge the sort of racist implement, be like, well, we all do come from the same genetic structure, so we should look similar to each other. I feel like that should be any racist's argument in like when some celebrity gets outed or something. It's like, well, you do come from a similar genetic background. It would be very confusing to me. But I think the main thing that I'm taking away from this episode and just from the rewatch in general mm-hmm. that I didn't appreciate in the show before is how much I love Riker.
I'm getting a new level of appreciation for Riker and Picard.
Yes.
But you go first and I'll tell you what I love about Picard.
I think Riker is the character that every other cast member or every other character on the show probably wants to hang out with.
Yeah.
And he, all of his scenes with, I can't think of another character in the show that I wouldn't want to see a scene with Riker.
Yeah, you know, that's a good point.
He's really good with Worf. Him and Worf had this like great little camaraderie going.
I have studied and know everything about my heritage.
Then you're just the person I need to talk to clear something up. It's been my understanding that one of the duties of the first officer of the Klingon vessel is to assassinate his captain.
Yes, sir.
Wouldn't that bring about chaos?
Of course not. See, when and if the captain becomes weak or unable to perform, it is expected that his honorable retirement should be assisted by his first. Your second officer will assassinate you for the same reasons.
The method of attrition must take a little getting used to.
The Klingon system has operated successfully for centuries.
Him and Data is always kind of funny.
Yep.
Because Riker always is a little bit amused. He's willing to lead Data down the wrong path to get the joke out of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, him and Picard is always great. And it's just everything, like, I was thinking, who else on this show would you send over to that Klingon ship? Like, who would make an episode out of it?
And not jumpstart a intergalactic war? Well, probably
that's,
nobody.
That's the thing. I was thinking.
Well, except for Worf, but I mean, what's the point then?
Worf is no point. The only other person I could think of that I'd send over would be Data, and it would be a totally different episode if that happened.
Yeah, I was thinking Data too, but yeah, I think there's...
It would be a comedy.
Yeah. Either that or it would jumpstart an intergalactic war.
Data would just kill everybody on the ship and have his way with it. But I just, I'm getting a real just sort of appreciation for how well Frakes plays him.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's eminently likable as a character. You know, it kind of makes sense that you can put him into whatever situation it is, and he will sort of have a handle on it, which is nice.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And him just going over here is nice, but it's just I thought the show did a really good job of stressing. It felt mature here, like the scene where Picard and Riker are practicing their phaser on the phaser range.
I love that scene. Not because of anything that happens in it, but because of their phaser shooting stances. Because Riker looks like a drunk cowboy, and Picard looks like a blind fencer.
Yeah, Picard, or I sort of get the samurai thing on Picard, where he's got the one elbow up and his arm is sort of out straight. But
yeah.
I just think it's a nice little character scene, just because Picard does not outright say what he wants to happen. But right, you understand why he wants it to happen, and it's also a nice fleshing out of Riker's sort of willingness to accept the cowboy challenge that Picard really can't accept, you know, at this point because he's the captain of this ship. And it just broke. I just like the gusto that Riker goes at the food with.
Yeah.
Klingon cuisine basically seems to be Asian cuisine, right? It's just like a little bit of a weirder take on Asian sushi and stuff.
I guess alive.
Yeah.
In a live version.
A live version.
With a lot more worms.
A lot of squid-like things.
Yeah.
But it's just, I just think, I really enjoy that one. It's just a, it's a nice, nothing here doesn't really work for me. Even, you know, like the reason that they can't tell the Klingon ship about the problem is because they have this Benzite character who refuses to tell people what the problem is ahead of time.
Right.
So it's not like, you know, and if this was like a first season show, you'd have something where you'd be like, why didn't they just tell them about this? Like it would have been, it would have been written to the point where they would, the Klingon ship would have just flown off and the Enterprise wouldn't have told them and then had to go chase after them or something. It's just a nice maturity that here the script actually backs up what happens.
Yeah. Well, what I said before is it gets the most out of building tension off of cultural misunderstanding.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is something that in the first season they could not do to save their lives.
Yes, you're right.
I mentioned the neutral zone. The neutral zone is just basically 40 minutes of talking about nothing, and then the implication of not even having a conflict that implies violence. It's an implication of a conflict,
right?
That is then resolved with just being like, "Oh, okay. Well, we just wanted to tell you we're here. We'll see you guys later.
Good to see you, Romulans."
Whereas this episode, it effectively moves the story forward using all of these cultural misunderstandings that is the basis of the episode without really shoving it in your face. The Klingon thing, I feel like in another episode, in an earlier episode.
Well, because we just, I mean, just to sort of brace for what you're going to say, we've had one episode of Klingons so far in Heart of Glory. Right, and you watch that one.
All of these Klingon episodes have such dramatic names.
They do. It's a Matter of Honor, Heart of Glory. Although they at least say Matter of Honor in this episode.
They're all like unused titles for Billy Joel albums.
But that's the, you know, the Klingons in Heart of Glory had no nuance to them. And here I think that they actually do a pretty good job of making them a believable society.
Oh, definitely.
Even though I don't really understand how they survive when they can't fix anything.
Yeah. Well, what I was going to say was, in this episode, the Klingons, or I should say, in an older episode, all of the conflict would probably have been born from stuff happening on the Klingon ship.
Right.
Whereas what they do that's actually pretty smart is the big misunderstanding and the big catalyst comes from the lesser of the misunderstandings happening on the Enterprise.
Yeah, no, it's true. It's a when I saw the little description on the Amazon thing, I thought I haven't seen these in a while, but I thought Riker was going to beam over to a ship that already had nefarious plot underway. And that's not the case at all, which is nice. You know, that as you were saying, the Enterprise is sort of the reason, or this ensign, the Benzite ensign, is sort of the reason why they can't just disarm the situation from the get-go.
Yeah.
And I like the scenes on the Klingon ship. Riker eating in the mess hall is a fantastic little thing.
Yep.
With the Klingons, you know, they have the funny line about the breastfeeding or whatever. Riker's too soft to actually eat Klingon food.
Which brings me to my biggest question. Why did Riker not totally throw down for that Klingon three-way that was applied? Because in any other episode, he would have been like, all right, I'll see you guys later. Here's the B plot. Riker has a three-way.
He just grabs a handful of gach and walks out of there.
Pours it over them like champagne.
It's it was just nice. Like they're actually playing the. It was the first time I think that the show has actually played a race that isn't so one note as to be sort of ridiculous. You know, the Klingons are shown to be this, you know, this sort of warrior thing that you couldn't really function as a real society, but mm-hmm. they at least have a little bit of nuance to them.
Yeah, I thought the Klingon played by Brian Thompson was, I thought he was great.
Is he Clegg, the second officer?
Yeah.
Okay.
He, like, the way he played him plus the story they gave him was really good.
Yeah.
Because you get the scene in when they're all eating when Riker's asking about his family and he starts talking about how his mother was alive, but his father's
still alive.
His father's still alive, and he was not going to be able to die in battle, so he was therefore like a disgrace to the family.
Yeah, yep.
And he plays that with like enough of an inflection that he is saying this because it's what he's supposed to say.
Yep.
But it's not actually how he feels.
Right.
Like he's playing it like you'd get from Spock or Worf, where there's an implication of an emotion there, but it's not one that they're supposed to let come to the surface.
Right. His culture sort of is preventing this from being exposed.
Right.
No matter how he actually sort of feels on the inside. Mm. And Riker has his, you know, the good response, which isn't even sort of cheesy. Just like, I can learn to eat worms. You can learn to talk to your father, kind of. Yeah. I mean, it sounds stupider when you sort of say that that's what they do, but it's played pretty nicely between the two of them.
Yeah, I thought their whole thing was great. Because, I mean, honestly, if this was a, I don't know, if this was written simpler, it would probably be that that second officer was, I don't know, sabotaging something, or you know what
yeah,
I mean? Like
no, he, yeah, yeah, right.
Where the whole interaction and the whole arc for that character is a change in philosophy, basically.
Mm-hmm.
That character usually would be the one who is trying to sabotage the ship or trying to, you know what I mean? Like that character is usually the Iago character.
Yeah, exactly. And there's no, it's like you were saying, there's no villain in this episode. It's just a misunderstanding. You know, it's the closest you can come to a villain would be the Klingon captain who I guess I'm a little bit torn on because I think he's acting like they want the Klingons to be portrayed,
mm-hmm.
but it's hard. I think it just ties into my thing of like, they can't fix the ship. How do they ever survive when they like, they're like, we can't fix that. We'll just blow up the Enterprise because that's the last ship we ran into. It must be their fault.
Yeah.
Where a Klingon captain, it's like, how do they ever sort of get by without fighting somebody? You know what I mean? Like how do they ever have a negotiation when the first thing that comes to their mind is like, we'll go to Cloak and then we'll blow them up when we find them.
I agree. I think he is, you have to have that character to
kick it off.
To generate any sort of conflict.
Yep.
But, I think probably the other way they could have done it was make that second officer basically have the captain's traits.
Yes.
And have the captain be a little bit more level-headed. So you've got Riker saying, no, it's not the Enterprise. And then the other guy being like, don't listen to the human, blow up the Enterprise.
Right,
that
exactly.
Kind of thing.
Yeah, I think that might make more sense, although that would get rid of the nice camaraderie that Riker has. So it's kind of a damned if you do, damned if you don't situation.
Right. Yeah,
yeah it's another nice, sort of nice character moment with the captain is I thoroughly enjoy Riker letting him get a little bit of respect at the end by letting him hit him.
Yes, yeah.
You know, just to sort of let the captain save face at the end of everything in front of his crew.
Yeah.
That was nice. And Another little subtle thing I liked is just to tie in with, like, Riker gets along with everybody. I love Riker and O'Brien's little thing before he gets beamed over.
Oh, wait. Is this my first O'Brien episode?
It might be. He's been in episodes previously. Do you want to wax poetic about Chief O'Brien?
I don't know. I've always loved Chief O'Brien. He was, I think I was, when I watched it when I was younger, I think I recognized him more than I recognized Geordi, who was absent in this episode, actually.
Yes, he was. And it's funny because in the episode before this one, which was the aging one, Unnatural, the one where Pulaski gets old, she gets the aging disease.
Oh, right.
Yeah. O'Brien does the Geordi role in that episode. Because when they're like, we need to fix the transporters, and Chief O'Brien is like, I'll do it. And you'd be like, wouldn't Geordi be the one who should be in here doing it? I just love I think Colm Meaney is a very strong actor for this series. Maybe not.
Oh, he's great.
In terms of, like, you know, global acting, he's probably not anything particularly amazing, but he's wonderful in this, obviously why he got his role on DS9. And I just, his little interplay with Riker, he's like, are you nervous? And Riker says no. And he's like, I would be.
Yeah.
Beams him over.
Good luck, Commander.
Thanks, O'Brien.
I wouldn't want to go.
Why?
You're not afraid, are you?
No, I'm not.
I would be.
Yeah, I mean, he's never, well, I guess he gets a decent amount of story later on, right? He gets, like, a wife and stuff.
He does, yeah. And it's the sort of one mistake they're making earlier is he has command pips on his uniform this early. And I didn't know if you know this, but O'Brien is unique in the Star Trek universe for being the only major character who's a non-commissioned officer.
Really?
Yeah, so he...
Yeah, I didn't know that.
O'Brien has to refer to anyone, even ensigns, as sir, because he has no rank.
Interesting. Yeah, but he always... I don't know why, but he always stood out to me when I was watching when I was younger, to the point where I've noticed his name in everything he's been in that I've seen since.
Right.
So if I'm watching something and his name pops up, for whatever reason, that name always stuck in my head.
Yep.
It's like, oh shit, Chief O'Brien. Yeah, this movie's gonna be at least good for some of it.
Do you ever see The Commitments?
No, I haven't.
He's in The Commitments. So he's very good in that. If you like Motown soul music, it's a good movie for that.
Ooh.
But I think he's fantastic. He's popped up in a couple episodes previous to this one, but he's definitely starting to get play. I think they're trying to flesh out the supporting cast in the second season. Because he's always there. It doesn't seem to be the most exciting job in the world to be a transporter chief.
As we learned from the fantastic comic strip Chief O'Brien at Work.
you're just kind of standing there all day until someone wants to beam over. And then you have an inordinate amount of stress on you when things go bad.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're really just – it's a lot of low lows and very, very high highs, I guess, as being transporter chief.
Yeah. There's that – you know, you get that one day where you transport somebody in the middle of a transwarp thing and traveling through a wormhole and pinpoint them into the bridge. And then the rest of the week is just checking the clock.
Yeah, basically just standing there. He doesn't even have a chair. He just has to stand there.
He's basically like a glorified greeter at Best Buy.
Yep. And just to continue just another couple. This episode is funny because I probably sound more praiseful than the episode deserves. I just think it's sort of like exuberant to me to be hitting a point where the episodes are starting to make sense and be watchable. In terms of just like, I usually watch them twice, and this one was the first one I wasn't like, ah, Jesus, I've got to watch it again. Like, it's just to just get through it. For more character stuff, I really enjoyed Data as a first officer. For some reason, he's not particularly exciting, but he is totally reliable, I guess would be the best way to describe him as a first officer. Even just the way he sits in the chair.
Yeah.
with Picard.
Is this the first time that he's done that?
He's had command of the bridge, but this is the first time I think where Riker has just been totally off the ship.
Oh, right.
Okay. And I love Data sort of sitting in the way he spins around in the chair.
Oh, right. Yes. that's Because he does it after the
Benzite. Yep.
You know, and he's like,
he says, how did you come to this conclusion when he says he didn't want to tell him?
The look, it's like a perfect example of the difference in acting styles between Patrick Stewart and Brent Spiner. Because where Patrick Stewart just kind of like gives him a head turn, Spiner turns the entire chair around.
And just stares at him. Why would you do this? And, you know, just to tie in the Benzite, I loved every interaction with Worf that the Benzite had.
Yes, yeah.
It's our first time seeing Worf as, because you never really think about it, but Worf is a senior officer. You know, he has a whole team that sort of reports to him. And just the line with, "You may impress me," is just fantastic.
Well, that scene is my favorite Picard bit from this episode, and it's the thing that I've touched on a bit on past episodes. But I really have been noticing the way Picard, or I should say Patrick Stewart, underplays annoyance or misunderstanding.
Yeah,
or, you know what I mean. Yeah. Like, 'cause that scene when he's on his way out and the Benzoid. Benzite, I can't remember.
I think they're called Benzites. We might have been calling them the wrong thing.
The potassium benzoate guy stops him and gives him the thing. He's got this look on his face that's like very that look on your face that you get when your neighbor like wants to talk to you for 20 minutes when you're already late for something.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
And he's like, "What the fuck?"
Yeah, it's interesting.
Like, he's looking around, goes like, "Is anybody else seeing this? Why is nobody stopping this guy from talking? I'm the captain of this ship."
Are you talking to me? But it's sort of an illuminating character bit for Picard, because Picard is probably not approached, and they do this later on in the series. Picard is not really approachable by the lower ranks, you know. In later seasons, they really sort of stress that, where people are uncomfortable talking to him, and you really only see him talking to his senior officers, who have more of a comfortable rapport with him.
Which is really strange. I mean, I've started to notice that a bit too, but it's so strange noticing that in a show. I should say it's so strange playing that in a show where this character is like, he's like your buddy. Like, if you're watching the show,
you feel very close to him, yeah.
Yeah, you know, it's like you've been there when he did all this other stuff, and you're there when he in all of the meetings and stuff. You don't get that feeling of aloofness that the captain of this gigantic ship probably has to everybody else there.
Yeah, no, because he probably is something of a minor celebrity. You know, if you think about it, like if you saw him, you'd be like, "Oh, there's the captain just walking around."
But like even if he goes into 10 forward, it's not like Guinan is in any way impressed that the captain has shown up.
Right,
he's like, "Oh, hey, captain, what's going on? Do you have something you need me to advise you about?
Hey, let me tell you about the future." Yeah, it's a. I think it's sort of an underappreciated difference between Kirk and Picard. Mm-hmm. You know, Kirk would be everybody's buddy, and Picard is much more aloof than that. Which is,
I was just gonna say, I think you get, I think that helps in adding to a much better sense of the amount of people who are on this ship.
Yeah, yeah.
Versus the original series, where I know they're flying a gigantic ship and every episode there's a new guy who gets killed or whatever.
Yeah.
But that ship feels like it's being flown by like six people.
Yeah, it is. I don't know the real I think the original Enterprise only had a couple hundred, and the Enterprise D is over 1,000. I think they say that a couple times. So yeah, it's physically much larger. It's hard to tell the size of the ships when they don't show them against, but the Enterprise D is supposed to be much, much bigger than the original Enterprise. But yeah, I thought this episode was just full of those great little character moments between people. What's the other the other Worf line is, he's like, "I'm sorry, I didn't mean to offend you." He goes, "You haven't offended me yet."
Well, one of the lines the captain of the Klingon ship drops is a foreshadowing to my favorite line in all of Star Trek, which is in First Contact, where Worf says, "If you were any other man, I'd kill you where you stand." Mm-hmm. He says something to that effect to Riker when he asks him to give up all the secrets of the Enterprise.
Yeah.
And he doesn't. And then he's like, "If you had told me anything, I would kill you where you stand."
Trick question. I guess that's the kind of the one issue with this. I don't really, you know, if you were to break down the plot, it's not particularly clear to me why they don't just throw Riker into the brig, you know, why he's allowed to continue to serve once they suspect that the Enterprise has done something to them. It has to happen just for plot, you know, development that he has to sort of be there. I guess you.
Well, I don't know. I mean, they make it pretty clear that once he's on their ship, he is part of their crew. So any allegiance he has to them is like, I see what you're saying, but it doesn't really bother me that much.
No, I think I agree with that. You know, it's like the title says, it's a matter of honor. Like the Klingons would see him swearing allegiance to them as sort of unimaginable that anyone could sort of break their promise. That's kind of a Klingon thing.
And also they make a good point of, the captain makes a good point of saying, well, doesn't matter what you did, now you are going to die on this ship.
Right, yeah. So you know? Irrelevant as to how you can sort of impact things.
Right.
Yeah, no, that's true. It's a it's interesting, and even just the final character beat is Riker sort of mock cut forcing the Enterprise to surrender to him.
Oh man, that that was the point where he comes on screen and says, "This is really William Riker of the Klingon ship Pod demanding your surrender." Yes, but he's been waiting his entire life to say something like that. That was really good.
He's always going to hold that over Picard. Be like, "You remember that time I made you surrender? That was pretty awesome." It's a super, super solid episode. I like this one. The reviews online have just been fairly pretty much the same. People considered it, I think Tor gave it an 8 out of 10. AV Club gave it an A-. I think it's really, really solid. I think this is the first good episode that I haven't had to hedge with go with the times.
It's weird because it's one of those episodes where I was watching it and I was thinking about it, and afterwards I was like, man, I mean, if you want to really get down to it, nothing really quote unquote happens.
No.
But it's but while I was watching it, it wasn't one of those ones where I was like, man, there's nothing happening in this and it's terrible. It was like, nothing's happening really, but the stuff they're getting is really good.
Right. It's all that interest. It's all the interpersonal character stuff.
Right. And right. Yeah. They're really starting to get into that stuff.
And I sort of have I was thinking about how to define this episode, and I first thought that I really have a soft spot for high concept Star Trek episodes. I sort of love them. Like pretty much all the high concept episodes I really enjoy, even the ones that are objectively terrible, like Genesis in season 7. So I like high concept, and this one is sort of high concept, but it's also really character based, which is sort of at odds with each other. You know, if people aren't familiar, high concept is basically the idea that a movie, if you were pitching a movie, you could summarize it in like a sentence and they'd be like, that's the movie right there. The famous example is like, it's Jaws in space or something. That's Alien, right? That's how they pitch.
More or less.
I think that's how they pitched Alien, would be it's Jaws in space.
Yeah.
Which is super high concept. And this one would be Riker gets a posting on a Klingon ship. You know, like that's the whole thing. But it's defined just by the character work that works. And that's what Next Generation is really eventually going to become.
Yeah, it's that sort of high concept stuff for a show like this is, I think they're getting to the point where those concepts written out so simply can generate stories based on the characters. Yeah. Like, one of my favorite, possibly my favorite show of all time is The Simpsons.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've listened to a lot of the commentaries on the DVDs and stuff, and they talk about how they used to break their shows and pitch their shows, and it would literally, you could see it in a lot of the names of the early episodes, because it would literally be someone has a list of ideas, and one of them is Lisa gets a pony.
Right.
Or Bart takes karate.
Yeah.
Or Homer loses his job. Yeah, or Homer goes to space.
Yep.
Where you can say that and you go, oh, okay, yeah, and you kind of like, it's a very good jumping off point. because you know what the character is like and how putting them in that situation will generate interesting things.
Yeah, I think that's a I think that's totally accurate about how that's why the first season of the show was so bad.
Right.
Because
yeah,
they
exactly.
they weren't focusing on the – they either didn't have the characters – I don't think it's that they didn't. I think they made a conscious decision not to focus on the character interactions in the first season. And
yeah.
the plots they were coming up with were nowhere near interesting enough to not have character stuff carrying it. You know, because if you – if you're having a sci-fi episode that is not – like the concept has to crush – you know, in terms of what people are expecting from it.
Right.
It would be something like Primer, like the sci-fi thing. With the, it's like, there's not a lot of character work in that movie, but the concept of like a realistic time travel is so fascinating that you can...
It's so confusing, it must be good.
Right, exactly. This blew my mind, therefore it's amazing.
Yeah.
But I think that was the problem with the early season here going on, and they're starting to fix it.
Well, yeah, it's – I mean, we've talked about it before where the early seasons – the first season, they didn't know really – all of their characters were basically one-line descriptions.
Yep.
And so all of their episodes needed to be super plot-based. And this is a perfect example of when you kind of turn that corner where the if you explain the plot of this episode to somebody more than just Riker gets a command on the Klingon ship – It's pretty boring. It's like it's like Riker takes a post on the Klingon ship.
A Benzite appears on the Enterprise.
The Enterprise finds some goop on the side of the ship, and they want to tell them. And there's a miscommunication, and then they clean the goop off the ship.
Yep.
It's like that. That's not an interesting plot. So in the but the character work they're doing is there, so they can do really good things with the characters inside of a
mediocre or a lackluster. Yeah.
yeah concept, Whereas in the first season, you've got what if we go to a plot that's, what if we go to a planet that's run entirely by women?
Right.
And, by the way, I'm never going to stop referencing that episode.
That's fine. It sounds remarkably similar to Justice too at that point. At a certain point, all the first ones are, it's like a, it's like we're leaving a city that we're never going to go back to, and it's all sort of blending together in my mind, even though every incident while we were there was something unique. But, yeah, I think you're 100% right. It's just like the concept is now – weak concepts can be saved by the actors,
yeah,
which they weren't able to do before.
So here's an interesting question.
Sure.
Do you think – you only get to this point because of the first season, or if you were recommending this show to someone, could you say, just start from the first episode of season two and it will be fine? You know what I mean? Like, is there, I guess I'm trying to think of, like, you get to these character points through the work that they did defining them in the first season.
Yeah, yeah.
Could you start the show, I guess I'm thinking from a creative standpoint, could you start the show with these characters so clearly defined as they are by the second season? Does that make sense?
I think so. So basically, could you, if someone was watching this for the first time, are you saying that you could just start with the second season and be happy with
it? Yeah, I guess I'm thinking about watching and also from like from a creation standpoint where they clearly had to go through the growing pains of their first season to define these characters.
Yep.
But was that a necessity, or was that just the way things shook out? Like, could you make this show and already have these characters be as good as they are by the beginning of the second season?
Yeah, I think the first season is a byproduct of terrible production.
Mm-hmm.
I think the writer's room was unsure of what was going on. I think Roddenberry had his strongest grasp over things in the first season.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently his lawyer was a big problem.
Really?
I think, yeah, the story sort of goes that his lawyer sort of had a have you ever seen – what's that Metallica documentary, Any Kind of Monster?
Oh, Some Kind of Monster.
Yeah, you know how the psychiatrist starts basically thinking he's in Metallica?
Yeah.
That's basically what happened with the lawyer. The lawyer started to sort of – be a little bit, you know, more overbearing than he really deserved. And that was causing a lot of strife behind the scenes. But I think the show could have started with the second season the way it is. It's mm-hmm. just the first season was such a disaster from a production standpoint that they never got to it. Mm. And, you know, if you were starting the series, I think you could start with season two. I think you'd only really have to watch Encounter at Farpoint.
Yeah.
And because that's Q.
Mm-hmm.
You'd really only have to watch Encounter at Farpoint, I think. Because that introduces why everyone's on the ship. And it introduces Q, who's arguably the only important thing that came out of season one.
And it's probably better to just skip Tasha Yar than have to deal with the agony of losing her.
Yes, although there's an argument for you that the first season makes yesterday's Enterprise that much greater.
That's true. Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah, it has to, I guess.
Yeah, so it's a tough decision. Because yesterday's mm-hmm. Enterprise would not nearly have the impact that it does if you hadn't been familiar with the R.
Right. When does that happen? Is that like
season three, midway through?
Season three?
Yep. So that's it. I'm going to give this one a 4 out of 5. I would show this one to a non-Star Trek fan, and I think they would enjoy it.
Yeah, I would agree. I think it is the first one I've watched. I think that's why it's after it was over, I did feel like I had the quality kind of blew by me a little bit mm-hmm. because, like I said, it feels like an older first season episode where there's not really a quote unquote plot.
Right.
But then I was like, wait, but everything that they did was really good.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think I would agree. I think it's the first really solid non-gimmick episode that they've done.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting. And the one after this, Measure of a Man, is also a very, very good episode. So
also an unused Billy Joel album title.
Absolutely.
Commander, you're not eating very much.
Not that hungry. Is the food all right, Commander?
It's delicious.
Pippia's claw was excellent. I also enjoyed this breguet lung.
And the roe keg blood pie.
Delicious.
Good. Then you'll also enjoy this.
Isn't that gach?
Very good. You did some research on our nutritional choice.
Yes, but still moving.
Gar is always best when served live. Would you like something easier?
Easier?
Yes. If Klingon food is too strong for you, perhaps we could get one of the females to breastfeed you.
Oh, boy. Well, thanks, Clay. Thanks for joining me again.
Thanks for having me.
And, do you have anything you want to plug on here? We're doing our Prisoner podcast.
Yep. Wes is kind enough to sit through 17 episodes of my favorite sci-fi show, The Prisoner. You can find that at backinthevillage.com. We go through each episode and talk about it, much like we do with Star Trek here. You can follow us on Twitter at Prisoner Podcast. And, I think that's it.
Absolutely. Well, yeah, thanks again. And this is a solid 4 out of 5. The show's turning. I can feel the wheels in motion. Things are getting better. And the second season is interesting. I'm looking forward to my sort of wrap up at the end of the season about what I think, because the second season is odd. It might be the oddest season out of all the show, all the ones that the show had. But
yeah, I haven't watched enough of them. I haven't watched enough of them from season two yet to really kind of get the unevenness.
Yep.
Really.
Yep.
But yeah, it wouldn't surprise me because I mean, you know, if they're if they're going through their adolescence, so to speak, there's bound to be a lot of pimples.
It's true, and it's not even really. There is unevenness, but there's also a sort of startling mediocrity to a lot of them. Like it's like there's nothing really wrong here, but I don't want to watch this one again.
Yeah,
you know, which is almost worse in some ways than the season one rewatch. So it's interesting. I'll have to watch it all the way through. But cool. Thank you very much. And yeah, guys, I'll be back with Measure of a Man, and someone will help me talk about that one. It's also a good one. And if you enjoy the content, if you're watching on YouTube, a like and a comment's appreciated. If you're on iTunes, a rating and review is always very much appreciated. Thank you guys for listening, and we will be back with Measure of a Man. See ya.